Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Hello and welcome to the Regiment, the Early Doors podcast with him.
Phil Neely, that's me, yes.
And me, Ben Steele. And this week we are talking about Series 1, Episode 3.
Wow.
But before that, Phil, how are you getting on?
I'm all right, mate. For you? It's beautiful, yeah. I'm going to see Loose Windscreen tomorrow, the boss. I'm going to see Bruce, at Villa Park tomorrow, which I'm really looking forward to. I'm going with my mate who's been, at the end of this tour, he'll have been 70 times in total.
That's incredible.
Not just on this tour, it's spread out over years, but yeah, goes all over the world to see him. And one of his mates has dropped out, so I'm in. And the great thing about it is, of course, is that because he's in with all these other nut jobs. Well, so I mean, super fans of Bruce, of course. They don't mean nut jobs. that they get brilliant tickets and we're right in the pit at the front. So I've only seen him once before. And it was at Hillsborough in the 80s. And I love on the Tunnel of Love tour, which isn't a great album, well, I don't think, but I really love Born to Run. I love the song Born to Run. I just think it's genius. So I really just went for that. And then it came on the encore and he's going, right, okay. And it's just sort of great, here it is. And he did play Born to Run, but an acoustic version, which was, well, it's, you know, it's all right, but it's not Born to Run. It's not saxophone. It's not everything. But I'm assured that this time, by Keith, my mate and the Bruce aficionado, that he's definitely going to play it. I think he's probably had a word with Bruce and Steve Van Zandt. So look, can't bring Phil along if you're not going to play Born to Run. So that's happening. So I can't wait.
Very good.
Yeah.
So what three songs do you want to play tomorrow? Your top three Bruce songs?
Oh, well, definitely Born to Run.
Mm-hmm.
10th Avenue Freeze Out. I think it's a great song. And probably Badlands, I think.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. I really like You're Missing from the Rising album.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, cool.
It's a bit of a hipster choice.
Yeah.
But if you listen to it, it's a really quite sad song, but so well written.
Yeah.
Yes, it's a very nice song. Very nice song.
Yeah. Oh, he's done a genius. I mean, the thing is, I'm hoping that, because the plan is to go, and with it, this weather, is to get quite a few beers before we go in.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's going to be, you know, it's always, you know, when you go to a gig, it's always a nightmare getting a drink, isn't it? So,
yeah.
So I'm hoping that I can last for Born to Run and that I can remember it.
Nice.
By the time the gig's over. Don't ask me next meeting. You say, what did Bruce play? I'm like, well, all the early, you know, like from, yeah. Anything in the first 15 minutes, I'll probably remember. Then after that, it's probably, yeah. I think he played Born to Run, but I don't know. Yeah.
Not only that, it's the price as well. I was at Sam Fender at St. James's last week, and it was $7.50 a pint.
Oh, man. It's just a joke, isn't it? I mean it's crazy.
Don't get us wrong. My friend bought it for us, so I can't complain. But still, yeah. It cost him £7.50 a pint.
Yeah, that's just madness, isn't it? It really is. But tomorrow as well, because the weather's going to be like beautiful like it is today, it's just going to be really good weather for just having a few drinks and dancing around, isn't it? You know what I mean? You can't not do. So, yeah. Yeah, I think we're going to have a few beers before we go in. And it's all that, you know, I'm going to say when we get to our age, Ben, but I'm going to say when I get to my age, my mate said, you know what I mean? There is that toilet issue as well. You're like, you know what I mean? Back in the day, you could just tie a knot in it, but these days, no chance. It's like, you know, once you broke the seal, that's it. That's it. You're back in two.
You're done. You're done.
Yeah. So,
well, that's it.
All the joys of the older man's outdoor gig. Fantastic. Yeah.
Well, brilliant. That's a nice little tie-in because we will talk about the toilet soon, but we'll get on to that.
Oh, good.
Never start a conversation like that, but never mind.
I was going to say, yeah. I'm thinking it's great, optimistic. Great, let's talk about toilets. Sorry, go on.
Episode 3, series 1. Yeah. So, how I've done it this time, I watched it yesterday again and just wrote some kind of key points. But first things first, this is the first time we kind of join the pub about 40 minutes after opening. Everyone's already there.
All right.
Everyone's already drinking.
Yeah.
Eddie is talking about the temporary traffic lights straight away, and you can hear Mel's voice just like, Eddie, But was that a conscious thing, as in, like, oh, let's not do the third episode waiting to get in again? We want to try and mix it up a little bit.
Yeah, I think it's almost, when I think back about it, I think it's quite simple, really. It seems almost too simple in that, like, the first episode, you know, it's just Ken. Mm-hmm. Second episode, it's sort of Ken, but very, very quick. You know, it's us banging on the door.
Yeah.
And I suppose it's just like us gradually introducing everybody to the different times, the different world, the different characters, and it's all being done progressively. And because I think as well, it just gives the audience the time to get to know these people a little bit better, rather than being overawed with, because, you know, by the end of it, you know, there's got about 14, 15 characters in there.
Yeah.
And if you just plonk people right into the middle of them, so I always feel like it's not almost like I'm watching it, it's like I'm part of that group. So it's difficult to kind of, it's like when you almost like, I know it sounds a bit, it's like if you go to a party of your mates who you haven't seen for about 20 years, it's difficult because you can't get round to them all.
Whereas
if you saw those mates every week, then if they were all there, it would be okay. So it's kind of like that. I always like to think of it as myself, or I think we, Craig as well, but, you know, be one of those people in that pub that you actually don't see.
Yeah.
So you're almost like you're watching that world, which isn't a bad way to think about it, I don't think, because really I think that's why, you know, the viewers have got a lot of affection for it as well. It's because they feel part of it, part of that warmth, part of that, you know, like I think I've said before, I think you were just thinking, oh, man, I want to be in that pub with those people. I know kind of those people, and I want to be in there. So I think it's just like to gradually ease them into all these disparate souls.
This episode, I don't know what time of the year you were trying to portray, but last week when we spoke to Lorraine and how he said how hot the set was, this was really bright, like it was a summer's evening.
Yeah, I
guess you can't remember exactly, but I assume it was rather warm when they did that type of, like, not the nighttime, but like the early evening shots where it was essentially grow daylight.
Yeah. Well, any of the shots were, I mean, even when it's raining, even when it was, it's, you know, Daff Hobson, who's the director of photography on it, who's a genius, by the way, would, you know, because it looks great, Early Doors House, I think, you know, and that's nothing to do with me and Craig, that's him, you know, it's Daff who, you know, he made it look so beautiful. And he would just backlight it, you know, and then as soon as we'd finish a scene, they'd open all the doors, they'd have the air conditioners going and all that kind of stuff, because it was so hot.
Right.
Yeah. So that episode, though, if it's like a sunny day, I obviously had to turn it up a bit. So it will have been, you know, it will have been like a sauna in there. I mean, at least for me, I would sometimes try and take me, if I could, surreptitiously take my jacket off or do a scene or get a really light suit. But I always felt sorry for Rodders, being, you know, for Rodney.
Yeah.
We play old Tommy. Because he was always stuck in that big overcoat. You know, he never took it off.
He didn't.
No. So actually, he was there in that, you know, with that big overcoat on all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. I think Mark wore did he wear a jacket in most of them as well?
Yeah, mostly. But he would wear like a light jacket, yeah, whereas that's true. Quite a heavy, you know, quite for Rodders, he was in that big old, and because you know, because the nature of it, it's just kind of, well, it's just what an older bloke would wear, you know, with that old matted sort of furry collar on it and everything. Yeah. Bless him, though. I mean, he didn't really complain about that. He complained about quite a few other things, but he didn't complain about that.
Cool. Well, the first little bit is you and Craig, and you're talking about Neil Armstrong and how it would be before you mentioned the moon.
Yeah.
And Rick Michael, who Duffy couldn't remember until he mentioned pissing on the ceiling.
Yeah.
So I've got two questions about that.
Yeah.
Is that just you and Craig, basically? That's how you talk to each other. I think we've mentioned this before. And is Rick Michael, is that a real person from school?
Rick Michael is a real person.
called Rick Michael?
Called Rick Michael.
Okay.
He works at Manchester University, I see now, in the media there. He's a fantastic, good, really good friend of ours. So we just thought he can't do that. Well, at least I don't know. I've never been there.
Next question.
I don't think he can pee over his shoulder or whatever it was.
Pee in the ceiling.
Yeah, I don't think he could do that. I had a mate who could, called Steve. So we should have used him as a reference. But yeah, Rick is a real person. But so we just thought we'd put his name in it for a laugh, you know.
Nice.
But as far as that's concerned, that is the kind of, you know, like I say, I'm sure I must have said to my mate, Steve Hardacre, I'm sure I must have said to Craig, or tell you what, Steve, when he, you know, he's one of them. Oh, yeah, he can pee meters up the wall, like, and all that. And it's just one of those stupid lad things, isn't it?
Yeah.
That you of like, you know, you think, yeah, so absolutely. And it is that kind of, you know, it's just like all of his other accomplishments, just, you know, yeah. I don't remember. You know, he could piss on the ceiling. Oh, yeah, Rick Michael, yeah. You know, it's like, yeah, everything else, that's not, you know, he was a great artist, I think we say, and all that business, you know. We would have just like, yeah, so what? But the fact they could piss on the ceiling, now that is impressive. So yeah, it just does talking. Brilliant. But and as well, locking into that thing where it's not like a gag, is it, as such? It's an obviously, but it's just one of those things that people, again, even if you don't know someone that can pee on the ceiling, you know somebody that can, I don't know, stick a 50 pence piece up the nose and, yeah, and you wouldn't know it's there. You know, there's all, you know what I mean? There are just things, oddities about people that, you know, you're like, can he? Oh, yeah, or can she? Or, you know, it's just that lovely curiosity about of life, really.
Yeah. And it's those sort of things which I personally find really funny. So, like,
yeah,
catchphrases from shows, like Victor Meldrew being a prime example.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, they're funny, but then it becomes something else. It happened with Gavin and Stacey as well.
Yeah.
Whereas that will make, as in piss on the ceiling, I'm not gonna quote it at any time, but it'll make me laugh every time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because, well, yeah, and it's, there's a couple of things. I mean, you know, it's funny you say about analysing comedy, but it, you know, I suppose we are looking at it really, but there's a couple of things in it. First of all, it's like, how did he find that out? Like, how do we know that? So yeah, we must have witnessed him. So, you know, so there's the visual stuff that this guy in the talks, whether it's, you know, at school, he's realised that how long did he practice? Did he go in training for it? Was it like, you know, was it like a garden hose where he could adjust it?
The pressure.
The PS, the PSI and all that. Could he adjust?
Or the PSI.
The piss per square inch, yeah. As opposed to the pounds. But, you know, and then once he perfected it, he's come in and showed us. And then, so that's funny in itself, isn't it? The idea. And then the fact that, that's the thing. All he, you know, he could have been the chairman of ICI or gone on to be the representative for UNICEF. But really, well, all I can remember, or Duffy can remember, is that it's that thing of like, God, I wish I could do that. You know, really, that is impressive. So yeah, it's like, and look, those are things I think that will always be funnier than, I don't know, you know. Like you say, then I don't believe it, or I mean, we've got, you know.
Oh yeah, there is.
We've got catchphrases that crime can't crack itself, I suppose. But yeah, I always really myself, I really like the sort of making my own jokes up. So the fact that something can conjure up an image in your head is funny. I think that's what it is.
Yeah. I mean, don't get us wrong, we've named this podcast after a catchphrase.
Well, exactly. Yeah, exactly.
But
I know exactly what you mean.
Yeah.
You know, it is. I mean, we try not to over you. I mean, to the regiment, it generally be said once in an episode, but it was always at a point where we thought, oh yeah, this is, you know, we would never sort of consciously think we must get that in. Yeah.
Well, it's not said in this episode.
Oh, is it not?
I don't think so. No, I can't.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. So if an opportunity arises where we thought, well, you know, we wouldn't think, oh, we need to say that. There'd just be a moment and think, oh, you know, that's a to the regiment moment. We would kind of say to ourselves, you know what I mean? Because it'd be kind of fairly obvious where you want to say it. But yeah, anyway.
Brilliant.
Cool.
So a couple of quick things. And then there's two big, big points in this episode.
Yeah.
So, Tempe traffic lights, Joan's mother, Janice's son, is it Duffy's, Mel's dad, Big Boy's Beano, giving Liam grief. All of those things, that all those threads are mentioned within the first 4 to 5 minutes.
Wow.
And Janice pops in to pay back her bills and Tantastic and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So here's two other things before the other bigger scenes. Ken's cheating on the scorecard.
Oh,
can you remember the football team?
The one? Oh, that it was?
One, yeah. The one that Mel wins, technically.
Oh, the one that Mel wins. See, I'm tempted to say Huddersfield Town, but I don't think it was, because that was the one when...
That's right, yeah. It's the other one.
Yeah, so, it's the other one. I have no idea.
Well, it's the greatest football team of all time. It's Newcastle.
Is it?
Yeah.
Oh, well, who'd have thought? Just call me Nostradamus, mate. I thought 20 years ago I'm going to be sat opposite you, chatting away about early doors.
But
yeah, I did it for you, you see.
Oh, there you go. Wonderful.
Right.
So, this is a lovely point in time as well. So, Gene is on Mel's mobile phone.
Oh, right,
and I remember when people got mobile phones going, can you tell what room I'm in? Can you tell I'm on a mobile?
Yeah.
I wouldn't, it costs a fortune that, even though she's just talking about absolute drivel or nothing. Is that like a thing that you both recognize or saw in real life, of like people losing their mind over mobile phones? It was just like a moment of...
Yeah, it was just... let me try. I remember us thinking it was really funny. Me and Craig think it was funny when we were writing it, that because particularly, you know, older people, I'm like this with technology, but because I'm an older person now. But, you know, it is kind of, you know, like I'm doing a Zoom and I'm at my parents' house today.
Yeah.
And I'm going, and they have they're not quite sure what a Zoom is. So it wouldn't surprise me, you know, if my dad walked behind me in his vest and his own, it just wouldn't, because he wouldn't, he had no concept of what this is.
Mm-hmm.
And if it was presented to him, I mean, I've said, you know, I can actually see who I'm talking to. It's like the work of the devil, isn't it? It's there.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God. So the thing about mobile phones, we thought it was quite funny, particularly with Jean, because she's like, "Oh yeah, Bill, but I'm guess where I am? I'm on a mobile phone. Guess where I am now?" And we thought it was we thought it was sort of funny, you know. And I remember what's his name, the guy who wrote Queer as Folk, and he also wrote It's a Sin, Russell. Russell Davis.
Russell T. Davis. Yeah.
Well, he's a friend of Nicola's, and obviously who ran Red Productions, and has done work with him for years and years on all of many, many things. And I remember him loving it, and I remember him specifically talking about it to us and said, "Oh, that's fantastic. I love that, because it is that kind of thing." And again, you know, it's all those everyday life things that you just go, "God, that is so recognizable and funny." You know what I mean? It is all that. That's why, you know, because you just go, you know, if you're not doing it yourself, you know somebody who is doing that, or you've seen somebody do that kind of thing, you know. So that was a real shot in the arm for us, because we loved Russ. This was before you know, we started kind of, it was before it was even out, I think. And because Russell saw the edit, right, and he was like, "Oh, it's great." And it was, as I say, we were like, "Oh, well, if he thinks it's good and he's brilliant, then we're all right," you kind of thing. You know, it was really lovely for him. Yeah. So, yeah, it's just that thing of recognizing everyday things that you don't necessarily, you just sort of see in passing, but when you bring attention to it, everyone's, you know, people are like, "Oh, bloody hell, yeah, of course, that's," but you know, that's my, it's that lack of recognition, isn't it, and stupidity of it.
Yeah. Cool. So yes, the police come in and they're selling dodgy Sky cards this week.
All right.
you get the blueies, the lot. And
yeah.
Phil, this is the first time you check when you're serving the drink. What you're serving the drink.
Yeah.
He does that a little bit with Tanya as well, every now and again, which is, it's just a nice little detail.
Yeah.
But the two big scenes in this, for me anyway, we know we're leading towards the boys Beano, but for Gene, we're also leading to Crete. She loves Crete.
Oh, yeah.
So they're talking about Mel and maybe not going. It's the first time and Ash is not going to go on that.
Yeah.
Jean's bluffing / manipulating of Ken, as in, well, if you want to go away with the boys, that's fine. You know she doesn't mean it.
No, yeah.
But that part of the dynamic, where did that come from? Like the whole like going to Crete, could have been anywhere. Just brilliant.
It's that whole thing. You just know that Jean, you know, you just know that this is something, you know, she's always out for a freebie, isn't she? You know, and she sort of manipulates Ken, you know, she makes, you know, she'd have poured guilt on him all of his life, you know what I mean? Since he was able to look at, you know, do things around the house, or you just know he'll have been that kid that was going to the shop for her, or, you know, or what, you just know that he'll have had a life of that. So for him, you know, it's just he's accepted it now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, you know, she's always like, oh, you know, and you know that she'd be saying, which she does, I think, to Winnie. Like, oh, you know, she says, oh, but you know, she'd be going around to her friends giving, oh, my son, he does look after me, thinks of me, and he takes me off to this, that, and the other, and to Crete. And you know that she's the one that's making it, you know, making it happen. You know, she's, you know, putting the guilt trip on him. And of course, it's that, you know, that thing where everybody's been in that situation when somebody's like, well, you know, I mean, if you don't want to, I mean, it's fine, but, you know, and then she, you know, then she, well, but if I stay here, I'll probably get under Melly. Oh, I don't know what to do. Yeah. For the best and all that. You know, it's like everyone, you know, my ex-mother-in-law, who's got a heart of gold, but, you know, she could be very, you know, you can just, it's almost like sometimes with these people, you think it's so transparent and see-through, but they've just been doing it for that long that they don't realize themselves. Yeah.
And they're so good at it.
Yeah. And you can just imagine my mum and dad used to go as they got older, they went to this hotel in Tenerife all the time. You know, they went there for, you know, like must have been 15, 20 years on the trot.
Yeah.
So, you know, same hotel, same people. Oh, they are El Topi. Oh, we all know them there. They, you know, and it's just that thing that Jean, you know, will, you know, it's the highlight of her year, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah. She's going to be loath to miss it. But
well, yeah, well, she thinks she is going to miss it. And she calls Winnie, gets the wrong number, which was quite funny.
Yeah,
and
again.
This is another, for me, slightly nostalgic because it's online now, of holiday brochures.
Oh, yeah.
Greece and Turkey, and she throws it over her shoulder. Oh, that was brilliant. But I remember, like, when my mom would go to work and my stepdad, Michael, would be like, oh, pop into Lumpolly because it's start of the thing. And she'll come back with, like, 15 brochures from Mallorca in Portugal. Yeah. Look through every single one.
Yeah. I mean, you'd like, they'd come back. So my mum would do the same, you know. She'd go up to Co-op Travel or wherever it was, and you know, she could hardly lift the bag because, you know, it was like she got, you know, it's like she brought on War and Peace. Because you could just take, you know, they had all them glossy brooches, didn't they? Didn't they? And you just take one of each and she would come back, you know, breaking her back, sweating out. Yeah, let me give you a lift with your shopping mug. Oh, no, it's me shopping. It's me holiday brooches.
Yeah,
but she gets, well, you know, she's probably keeps that brochure and looks at it all year round. As I say, yeah. You know, it is that thing. If ever she's, oh, it's raining in Manchester or whatever, and she's like, oh, but this time next year I'll be in Crete, in Crete town, looking at the locals, staring at the locals. You don't mind it over there.
They don't mind it.
No.
Oh. Yeah. That again, similar to pissing on a lovely line. It's quite an innocent, wholesome line. There's no malice in it. It's just, I just don't mind. It's lovely.
Well, yeah. She's like, well, the two bees, you know, over here, people look, if you're staring at them in, but, oh, no, they're very friendly. You know, you're sitting, do people watch, you sit in the square and just stare at people. They don't mind it over there. You know, they probably do, but she's oblivious.
Yeah.
You know, she's just, you know, oh, yeah. It's great. You know, everything's through rose-tinted, funnily enough, thinking about the ending of the episode, through rose-tinted glasses, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very good. Two quick bits. So Eddie and Joan they're in the whole episode, but they haven't got many scenes in this one. They're just... Yeah. Dropping in lovely bits, as in the bill. I love that in Mark's theme, she's doing the theme tune again with the hand movements.
Yeah.
And Lorraine just smiling at him, like a smile laugh.
Yeah.
I used to like it when they had the feet. Oh. But I can see someone seeing that.
Yeah. Used to like it when they had the feet in it.
Yeah.
But at the end where they used to, I'd just see the feet walking off, and I think they changed it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, you know, you can imagine people, like, it's gone, you know, it's like that thing. It's almost like it's the, you know, jumping the shark moment. It suddenly went downhill from there. So it's almost like when Scrappy-Doo was introduced in Scooby-Doo, that it went off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's like,
nah, game's gone.
Yeah. And that was their yardstick. As soon as the feet went, we loved the feet. You know, you knew it was the end, and off went the feet and the tune.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, funny.
Cool. So one main big bit here. So Liam's in this episode a lot more.
Yeah.
And Liam, James and Mel, Christine, you can see their relationship in this because they're talking about they're getting deeper into Mel's dad's situation. They've found him, they're reaching out. And then she pulls that face, face.
Yeah.
And you can almost tell it's like James and Christine talking rather than the characters, which is really nice. And like, obviously it gets it more engaging. But straight after that, Liam goes to the toilet and Eddie and Tommy follow him in.
To witness for themselves.
Yeah.
The evidence that we've spotted the week before.
Uh-huh.
That you couldn't miss, basically, is what we've told them. Mm-hmm. So they've gone in. Do you know what though? But just before, I really love that scene that you just mentioned there. Mm-hmm. I've not thought about it, but I remember at the time. I mean, they're such a good-looking couple as well.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. I mean, Christine's beautiful, and Jim's obviously a really good-looking geezer, and it was really nice. It was very, I mean, because it is quite an intimate moment with them as well. She's, she's discussing this thing with her dad and she doesn't know what to do. And it's all quite low key because they don't really want anybody else to hear. But I really love that scene with them. I love, you'll notice how generally the cameras are, we kind of try to hold them back a little bit, but it's quite a close-up shot of the pair of them, I seem to recall.
Yeah, very, very close, yeah.
Yeah, and And there's a lovely kind of, yeah, there's a great connection between the two of them. I mean, the two of them went to the same a drama academy.
Right.
So they knew each other before Early Doors, weirdly, and but we cast them very, very, very separately.
Mm-hmm.
And Christine was cast very early on, and Jimmy was a lot later, because I think we talked last week about the stop-start nature of Gary yeah. commissioned and
mm-hmm.
and the old false starts. We had about two or three false starts. So Christine had been on it almost from the word go. But yeah, no, it was it's just a lovely scene, and you can kind of see they both got, you know, Jim obviously has got. I mean, Christine's been in loads of things, and she's been in films, and obviously Jim has gone on to amazing things, you know, in his career. But you think you can see in that thing how much camera loves the pair of them as well.
Yeah,
you know, it's very natural. Seen, I think that so, it's really good, and they're both brilliant actors as well. I mean, they're both brilliant in it,
yeah. It's one of those scenes similar to a lot of things in life where they do it so well, they think, that looks easy, but it's not, it's actually so much harder what they're doing to make it look so natural,
yeah. Whereas me and Craig, people are getting splinters off us because we're that wooden, aren't we? You know what I mean? But
not at all.
They're getting makeup, and we're getting a coat of creosote. But it is just, and I think as well by episode three, I think we've built up enough mutual trust with the audience to start moving into, because there's nothing funny about that scene at all. Well, there's only that bit when he says, you know, she pulls that face, but other than that, it's a scene of reflection. It's quite a dramatic scene, but I think by that time we want to think that, okay, we've worked, you know, we feel like if the audience is on side by, it's only on reflection really, and talking to you about it now that I think about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think at the time, though, you just think, right, okay, we can do that now.
Yeah. You know,
sometimes in sort of comedies, and I say in inverted commas, it's almost drama from the word go, whereas we sort of try to, you know, make it funny, and then gradually, you know, bring in the storylines, and then where we wanted to put the drama in, would be further down the line when we feel like we've earned the trust of the audience, if you like, and you know, to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Great. Funny, yeah. So the last big scene, so their naturalness and intimacy, maybe talking about Mel's dad.
Yeah.
Kind of ekes away a little bit next, because they're playing cards with you two, the Naughty School boys.
Yeah.
And they're talking about Clapton and level 42 and just, you know, just having general pub chat, and Duffy and Joe giving Liam woman advice.
Yeah, which is their great art, of course.
Of course, yeah. And Joe letting slip that the big boy he's going to the big boy's beano.
Yeah.
And how do I put this? So if it was some of my friends from school, they were like really nice girls.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, get on the wrong side, the Geordie comes out.
Yeah.
So I don't mean this in a nasty way, but the Manc comes out.
Yeah.
Well,
she just, it's one of those things, isn't it? Is that she's just been there being confined in him, and he's this sensitive, understanding, great guy. The next thing he's got, you know, she finds out he's got this, you know, it's almost shatters that. This, you know, he's the, for a moment, well, he is up until that point, he's knight in shining armor, isn't he, really? She's thinking, this is a great guy, he understands me, he's funny. Then all of a sudden, he's in with the old dinosaurs, isn't he? Going to a strip club and all that. And she's like, what? And he's not told her. But yeah, so of course, it hurts her even more, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because she's obviously, moments earlier, she's like, like I say, he's this kind of guy who's on a pedestal, who's obviously great and understanding and all that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a good season. It's similar to when they're telling Liam about the big boys being on last episode.
Yeah.
Again, you're on the smaller seats.
Right.
So he's getting told off, you two look like two naughty schoolboys.
I know.
And it's essentially Joe's fault.
Yeah. Oh, of course it is, yeah. But then we blame. I mean, the thing is that I really like us being on those little, that uneven thing and sort of looking over our cards. You know, it is like, and I don't think we even discussed doing it this way. I just think we naturally both. I think we probably must have mentioned it when we were writing, or we're like a couple of, kids, aren't we, really? They're just like a naughty schoolboys. And so I think consciously we both did the same thing. And like, and then, of course, when she's gone, it's like, well, you've handled it all wrong, mate.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm like, well, that just goes to show, doesn't it? There's no two women the same. you get away with it once. He's got away with it doing some like that before and now. But Mel's completely flipped.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. No.
There's quite a few good, like, little lines really quickly. And this happens twice quite quickly.
Yeah.
So you're right. You've handled it all wrong. No two of them are the same. And then Ken comes across almost to go right through Liam because he dumped her. Then realized it was Mel. He's like, that's life, Romeo. like just flip-flops straight away.
Yeah.
And Liam's devastated. He thinks the world's fallen down.
Yeah, of course he does.
But then you go back upstairs and see Mel's point of view. So like they're going, she'll be fine. Blah, blah, blah.
Mm.
And then Jean's flip-flopping is brilliant. Oh, I'm definitely going to Crete now.
Yeah.
No, sorry. It's just a bit of fun. I'm definitely going to Crete. Oh, well, you should have stayed. And then it just changes her mind instantly. And then she has that little smile.
Yeah.
And she walks away.
Yeah.
Well,
it's great.
All of that is brilliant.
Because everybody's like sort of... squirming and shifting for position, aren't they? Everyone's trying to find what's best for them. We're like, you've handled it wrong. It's now to do yours. Liam's like, what's just gone on? Mum's upstairs saying, oh, the dirty dog. Look, my dad's organised. Oh, well, it'd be hard. Just be a bit of fun. You know what I mean? And then, but this, that and the other. I'm quite, oh, yes, quite right. You should have talked. You know, so she's jostling for her position. And then when she thinks that, like, it's all fine, she can't be more, she's trying to disguise it, but we see it, don't we? She can't be more delighted.
No. And as you said before, she has the sunglasses at the end, which is which is great.
I really like that ending. And it's, again, it's a very, I don't know, it's almost like, who would end a sitcom, other than us, I suppose. But, you don't see most sitcoms that are usually, it's just her popping her head through. The thing with sunglasses on, you just know that she'd been planning it all along, despite Ken. What do you think of these then? There was a guy, what was he? I can't remember his name. It was like with Terry Waite and those guys who got captured. And his wife was called Sonny Mann. Do you remember her name?
Right.
And the only thing, and she was better him. He was an older guy, but the one thing I remember, and that we remember about it, was like, oh, it's, great that I can't remember his name, but he's been released and all that. But like, we were like, yeah, it's great. And all. Did you see her glasses though? That was the thing. We can get over the fact she had these. So when we said, look, we want a big pair of Sunny Man glasses. So if you Google after we spoke, you look at Google Sunny Man, and you'll just see this woman, this older woman with these massive, big glasses on. And we just said to the props people, we want a pair of Sonny Mann glasses for her. So that when she pops her head, you know, through and then you know, through the serving apps kind of thing, there she is with big glasses on. She looks like a cuckoo, don't she, poking her head through?
Yeah.
And I love that, you know, again, it's kind of simple ending, really. Mm-hmm. Nothing too, but I think it just says, you know, it's laughing. It's just, it just says everything you need to know about Jean, and that, you know, it's finally gone her way. She's delighted. She's got the glasses. She's ready. And what do you think? And, you know, she can't wait to show off now. She thinks she's got it.
Which she's probably had for weeks as well. Just waiting for that.
Oh, exactly.
Now. Yeah.
She's bought them. Because she's, as far as she's concerned, one way or another, you know, I mean, you know, all, so it just shows all the bluff about, well, you want to go on your own and this, that, and the other. You know, it's just all bullshit, isn't it? She's she's already, you know, she's already shopping for it. She's already been out and bought her big glasses.
Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Wonderful. So two last things.
Yeah.
So as we mentioned, that like quite tender moment between Mel and Liam about a dad.
Yeah.
There's also another one hidden when they're talking about Crete, which I was in my notes, but I forgot to mention it. And when Jean says to Ken, like, you need to talk about your problems, as in, that's quite ahead of its time. Calling out that men don't talk. Especially not these sort of things. So that's kind of like, it's not hidden, but there's a line, there's a laugh before and a laugh afterwards. So it kind of like, it's just nicely subconscious in there.
I think as well, I've forgotten completely about that. But I think, I'm guessing that we'd have thought, because we're starting to see that she's looking for a real dad and all that, and Ken's really keeping it to himself and how he feels about it. And we as an audience, you know, he's just going, oh, great. And, you know, obviously from what's to come in the next episodes, she's saying, you know, which is quite intuitive. Well, don't forget, it's her son as well. So, you know what I mean? She's quite intuitive, Jean, to be saying, you know, you need to talk about these things. You can't just, you know, whatever you're feeling. But he's not that bloke, is he? He's never going to talk about what he feels. He's going to try and lock it up, you know, kind of put it in a corner somewhere and just deal with it. Which is what he does.
Yeah. Great. One last thing.
Yeah.
There's a better example of this, I think, in series two, when Mel and Ken, Christine and John are taking the make out of Jean. But at the very end, when they're talking and Christine laughs in a certain way that is, I don't think it's acting, actually. They're so natural and genuine together. What were they like in general? Like, did they feel like
they are brilliant actors, so it doesn't surprise that bit doesn't surprise me that you think it's natural, but there was a natural natural affection for each other, which is really touching, I thought. I mean, they'd hug each other when they, you know, saw each other, and, John was, because John's got, I met John's family, you know, and Christine, well, Christine's with Jack, her boyfriend, but, you know, John's got a daughter who's probably, she might be a bit younger than Christine, I think. So, and Christine's lovely, John's lovely. So it was just, you know, they weren't acting, you know, in many ways in that score. So, well, they were, but they could easily, you know, that affection was genuine. Absolutely no question about that. And when you imagine, you know, you put yourself in that role, it just works a treat. And I love it. I mean, I've got two girls, and you know, I'm with the Castives, you know, and we have our own thing, but if we're taking the mickey out of somebody or whatever's going on. And they're just, you know, on screen and off screen, they very much had that lovely bond, you know, like father and daughter bond together.
Yeah.
It's great.
We can totally tell. Yeah.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Cool.
Well, that was episode 3.
Brilliant. Enjoyed
slightly
that.
Different to the last two, because you're developing the characters more, and it's a different time of day. There was a different atmosphere in the pub, which was nice. And I think next week even later, the next episode, see episode 4, or is episode 5?
You'll have to tell me. You'll have to watch it. I can't remember.
Yeah. Excellent.
Probably. Well, hopefully. Sure, there'll be a lighting change there.
Yeah. Maybe a bit cooler in the on set.
Yeah.
Excellent. So next time, talking about special guest.
Hi, it's Susan Cookson here, and I'm going to be guest on the next podcast episode of To The Regiment. Hope to see you there.
Enjoy Bruce Springsteen. For anyone
sounds
listening.
Like us. Exactly.
And for everyone listening, remember to like, subscribe, leave a rating, leave a star, tell your friends. And if you want to, get in touch. We'll be on Instagram, email, and Twitter.
Lovely.
And we'll see you in a week.
Yeah, see you in a week.
Bye.
Cheers. Nice one, Ben.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.